Deep in the Amazon rainforest, there is a tribe of people called the Achuar. Up until 10 years ago, they had lived and sustained themselves all by themselves. They had not interacted with the outside world at all. And this tribe, the Achuar, we believe has existed for hundreds of years. And they have absolutely no concept of money. Up until a decade ago, if a family had a child who wanted to be married, they would find their mate and the village would build them a mud hut. Everyone would share in the farming. If a hunter went out and shot a wild boar, they would all share the meat and feast. For the most part, their lives were comfortable, but it was very dependent upon the weather, the fertility of the land, the population of the animals. But they were content for many, many years. 10 years ago, some Christian missionaries found them. And having seen how other villages in the rainforest had been sort of taken over, their land purchased, and they had become lost, these Christian missionaries sat the tribe down and explained to them that the outside world was coming. They suggested that the Achuar identify a young person who was very bright, and they would bring this young person back with them to America, where this young person could live in their home and learn English and go to school and learn about this thing called money. The Achuar chose a young man, 26 years old, whose name is Chumpy. I like that name, Chumpy. Chumpy came back to the United States, stayed with the missionaries, and began to learn about our culture. And what was so fascinating was what he would observe. He would come home and say to the missionaries, "I went to one store and they had a chicken for sale and it was so much money. But then I went to another place and the same chicken was a different amount of money. How does that make any sense?" Or he would say, "You have this paper called the dollar that some people use, but then other people take a card and they go, whoop, and I can't see anything. Where is the money?" And the missionaries didn't really know how to answer. And as Chumpy got more educated, he would say things like, "I don't understand this stock market. You know, it goes up and down and everyone's upset or happy, but I don't see anything. Do you? Can you explain this to me?" And of course, the missionaries, like me, went to seminary, so explaining economics was not their forte. They went to a yard sale. Chumpy saw some shoes for sale, whatever it was, for $2. He said, "Oh, these are good shoes." The man said, "You can have them for 25 cents. "What? I thought it was $2. "Well, I want to get rid of it." "Huh. How does that make sense?" You know, when John the Baptist knew that the Messiah was coming, he kept saying to everyone, yelling, like, "Get ready right now, get ready, get ready." And people would say to him, What do we need to do to get ready, though? How? Tell us how to get ready. What are we supposed to do? Are we supposed to pray? Are we supposed to, what are we supposed to do? And you know what he said? He said, give away some of your stuff. If you have two coats, give away one of them. He didn't talk about prayer. He talked about what we were doing with our resources, that somehow getting ready for the Messiah involved thinking about what we owned and doing something with it. What is money? I like to think of it as like a great river. It's moving, isn't it? It's an exchange of goods, and it changes and shifts. Some people have a great river of lots of resources flowing through their life, and they can ride it and enjoy life and do wonderful things and live fully. But if they're not careful, they can also be sucked into it and drowned. Like the water of a river, if you try to hold it, sometimes it just seems to slip away. Or some people don't have a big river, but they have a little stream, and it moves them along, and they can do good with it. They may sometimes be scared that it may dry up. But it seems to me that it's something that sort of moves through our lives. It flows. Jesus tells us a very complex parable today that talks about what money is and what it isn't and what we should do as Christians. He talks about a master who owns a great estate, and he puts a manager in charge of his wealth. And at first, the manager just has a good time. He, quote-unquote, squanders it. And the word is the same word that was used in the story of the prodigal son. Do you remember the prodigal son? He goes out and squanders his father's wealth. I think what that means is he had a really good time. So he was just enjoying himself and spending the master's money kind of willy-nilly on whatever he wanted until the master figured out that this wasn't working so well. So he said to the manager, give me an account of what you've been doing with my resources. Which is really what God says to all of us, right? I mean, the air that comes into your lungs, your body, your clothing, your home, everything, you cannot hold on to it for very long, right? Anyone who's raising children knows I want to put a brick on their head, but it just doesn't work. They keep changing and growing and they go. Or our bodies, they keep aging and changing. We cannot hold on to any of this. It is entrusted into our care for a period of time. Everything that you have is entrusted into your care for a period of time. And the question is, what will you do with the resources that God has put you in charge of? A manager, another word for a manager is a steward. Putting in charge of stuff that doesn't really belong to us because we can't hold anything. We're not eternal people without God's help. This earth, God willing, will continue on without us, but we will not be here beyond our lifespan. We cannot hold anything here. So the manager, the steward, wakes up. He wakes up and he realizes that he has charge over this wonderful wealth, but it's not going to last for very long. In fact, in his case, it's not going to last for long at all. But he does have a few days left. So he changes his course. And what he does is he uses the resources to build relationships. He calls in people who are indebted to the master and he forgives their debts. He loves them and they love him. He builds trust so that one day, if he has nothing, maybe they'll welcome him into their homes. Is it selfishly motivated? Absolutely. But you would think that the master would be angry at the manager for using his money to establish relationships for himself, but the master is not angry. He says to the steward, to the manager, "That's right. That's smart. You're using my resources to build relationships of love. You're using my resources to build something that lasts, something eternal. The eternal riches," he calls it, "which have to do with the only thing that you can take forward from this life to the next, and that is love. Use what you have as a love letter to God and to the people that you love. Move with it, dance with it. Express God's love with it. Maybe those flowing waters could become the ink of a letter that you write with your life, a letter of praise and thanksgiving, not of fear and holding on, but of giving. When you die, no one will remember what you held on to, but they will remember what you give." Yesterday, we did a funeral for a wonderful man, Reed Deering, who many of you knew. He was an expert in our stained glass windows and knew every single detail about who had given what so that they could be so beautifully made. Before his stroke, he met with his grandchildren. He didn't have an enormous amount of resources, just a stream that ran through his life. He was comfortable. But he met with each grandchild and he said, "Here is some money from me." And then his grandchildren told me that he gave them one simple piece of instruction, which was very open-ended. In fact, they found it a little frustrating. He said to his grandchildren, "Take this money and celebrate, because I am going to the king. Take this money and celebrate, because I am going to the king." After he died, his grandchildren talked to me, and one grandson was thinking of starting a business to honor his grandfather. I don't know what they're going to do. It's up to them. But he made the celebration part pretty clear, didn't he? After his stroke, when I went to the hospital, he couldn't speak. But we did the prayers and the songs, and he had come to worship so much that I knew he loved them. He was smiling. And he managed to say one word. It was his very last word. It was such a good word. This is what he said. "Amen. Amen." What will you do with the gift that is your life? How will you use it to sing God's praises? What will be your final word?